Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and the host of the Jill on Money podcast. Beginning, middle, or end of the year, it's always a great time to take control of your financial life. And the Jill on Money podcast is here to help. Your questions make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money and, more importantly, on your life. Follow and listen to Jill on Money wherever you get your podcasts.
Steve Thompson sitting in for Denny Long today. Mary Meyer joining us on our Smart Garden Show. And our phone number is always 651-989-9226. 651-989-9226. You can call or text. Mary, good morning. Thanks so much for joining us on the program today.
Good morning, Steve. Good to be with you.
Yes, and we always get a lot of calls and texts. And we should probably start with the cold temps. We have 20 degrees right now here in the Twin Cities area, and I'm sure people are seeing the daylilies and even maybe the peony is popping out of the ground. Should people be concerned with this really cold morning?
Well, it did feel like February again for a little while. Yes, it was. We had a drop in temperatures, but most of the plants that are out this early are still okay. I was hoping that we wouldn't see anything below 20 degrees. Once we get below 20 degrees, we can get some damage, but I think we just maybe escaped a lot of that. Our listeners that are further up in the north, of course, have still got some snow cover, so that helps them. I have crocus blooming in my lawn, and they're dark purple now, dark color, but I think they will be okay. And the weather forecast is looking good, so it's looking like that hopefully this is one of our last cold days.
Yeah, really, really chilly, and Friday didn't feel too great as well. And by the way, that number again, 651-989-9226. We already have a number of texts on the program today, and we'll get started there. Mary, I have an antique rose bush. It's about 80 years old. I want to transplant it from the north side of the house to the south side. Number one, how do I do that? And is it possible to share some of it with my daughter?
Okay, a rose bush, you can move this now in the spring, and you could do that as soon as the soil has thawed out enough before the plant starts to grow. I would dig the hole where you're going to put it, the new location, get that all prepared and ready before you get the before you dig the rose out of the ground. Use something to transport it, a wheelbarrow. If you can wrap up the roots so that minimal soil loss is there, that's a good idea. Sharing the rose bush is a little bit more difficult because you can't divide a rose like you do a peony or a hosta. The only way you're going to be able to propagate that rose is really a cutting. Now, that's really a challenge, but I know that some of our listeners out there have done grown roses from cuttings, but that's much more of a challenge. But I assume because this is an heirloom and a particular rose, it isn't like you can go to the garden center and find that same rose again. So taking cuttings, the softwood cuttings, as the plant starts to grow this spring, that's information that you'll want to look up on our website at extension.umn.edu, and then click on Yard and Garden and look for propagation of plants. So good luck with that. You can do it, and there's some information online.
Mary Meyer joining us on our Smart Garden Show each and every Saturday morning between 8 and 9 a.m. Let's go to the phone lines. Jeff, South St. Paul, you're on the air.
My question is, I'm noticing an abundance of moss growing. Well, I've got one. It's underneath an oak tree and a spruce tree. I'm wondering, does lime take care of that?
Well, moss, Jeff, is usually there because of fertility and low nutrient levels. It's unlikely if you're in the metro or southern Minnesota that you need to apply lime because we have alkaline soils generally. So moss is not so much a pH indicator as it is low fertility, low nutrients, and conditions that don't favor other plants to grow. Now, there is a big movement for planting moss in your lawn. Some people like the look of moss. But usually the first step is to take a soil test of that area and determine what the nutrient level is. Usually these are shadier conditions. So if you can't improve the habitat for other plants to grow, maybe you can learn to like the moss or keep it there. But I'd recommend a soil test if you really want to change things, and then probably one of the fine fescue grasses that will tolerate lower nutrients and lower light conditions.
And Mary, I have heard over the years that in lower light conditions when it comes to turf grass, that you probably need to seed that area just about every year to kind of keep up with it, that ultimately that you're going to be able to establish a lawn and not have to seed it every year is probably not going to happen.
Exactly right, Steve. That's right. It's kind of an annual thing to put that grass seed down. And, of course, there are other alternatives. You can go to a ground cover. You know, some of our aggressive ground covers like Lamium, more of the evergreen ones like Pachysandra and Periwinkle, those are alternative plants that you can put in that area rather than turf grass.
Speaking of turf grass, from our text line, I have an area that I'm planning to seed. I've already prepared it with soil. Is it too soon to put down the grass seed? When is a good time to do that?
It is too soon now to put down grass seed. I follow the soil temperature maps that are online. You can find the climate. If you just Google soil temperature maps, Minnesota, the Department of Natural Resources and the Department of Ag have a great soil temperature map. You can see that the soil temperature was in the 40s, up into the high 40s, took a big dip down when we had this last few days that were quite cold. But you will not see grass seed germinating until we get up into the 60 and 70 degree soil temperatures. And those soil temperatures, incidentally, are also the same for our weed seeds to germinate, such as crabgrass. There's some maps that show actually the emergence of crabgrass seed throughout the United States. And right now it's happening in Missouri. So we have a few more weeks to go before our soils are warm enough for grass seed to germinate. So I would wait to put it down. Probably it's going to be closer to the middle of May, early May, mid-May. But again, tracking the soil temperature, that's pretty easy to do.
To the phone lines again, let's bring in Barbara Newhall. Barbara, you're on the air. Hello.
Yeah, hi. Say, is it too soon to get Lyme disease? I haven't been feeling good. Now I've got a target rash on my leg, so I'm on an antibiotic. But I was wondering, is it too soon?
That's a good question, Barbara. The ticks and their activity, I'm not exactly sure temperatures are necessary for ticks to actually become activated. So you might find that information on our website under insects and all about insects that's there. But when it gets to human and medical conditions, your best bet is to refer to your doctor.
Right. The activity of insects, though, I see a chance of thunderstorms Tuesday and highs in the 70s. I bet we'll start to see some insects out and about on Tuesday. It doesn't take much.
Yes. It doesn't take much, and the bumblebees, other bees will start coming out, and that's why our early flowering, the first flowering plants, the crocus and so on, are very helpful for those pollinators.
Before we take a break, Mary, circling back around to the peonies, the daylilies, tulips are starting to pop up out of the ground for some folks, especially in those warmer areas, etc. Is it something you should fertilize early in the season, or is that something you should wait?
Fertilizing the spring flowering bulbs, a good time to do that is just as they're flowering and as their foliage is growing. We need to keep the green foliage on daffodils and tulips for several weeks after they flower. So that's right. Just as they're flowering and finished flowering, that is a good time to fertilize. Some of the bulb growers like to use compost. They like to put compost around those bulbs to increase the organic matter of your soil. I wouldn't worry too much about fertilizer being the limiting factor. The main thing is to leave the foliage on those bulbs. One of the bulb growers likes to say 8 weeks. You need to have 8 weeks of green foliage growing on daffodils to have them flower well every year. So be patient and keep the foliage.
All right, very good. Any need to fertilize, say, the peonies or daylilies?
Usually not. You know, peonies are an amazing plant that has a tremendous big root system. And usually fertilizer isn't the limiting factor. Usually that's sunlight with that case. And then daylilies are a wonderful plant to grow interspersed with our spring flowering bulbs like daffodils and tulips. Those spring flowering bulbs will flower first, then the daylilies will come on and grow, and they will flower later. And you won't notice so much the daffodil or tulip foliage there that doesn't have the flowers on. You'll be focused more on the daylily and their growth.
All right, quick break. We have more with Mary Meyer on our Smart Garden Show each and every Saturday morning between 8 and 9 a.m. The number again, call or text 651-989-9226. Here on News Talk, 830-WCCO. It is our Smart Garden Show. Mary Meyer in today. Our number is 651-989-9226. 651-989-9226. You can call or text the program. Keep that number handy. It's good for all our shows 7 days a week here on News Talk 830-WCCO. Let's go to the phones. Donna, you're on the air with Mary Meyer. Good morning.
Good morning. My question is, I have about 15 amaryllis bulbs that have bloomed during this dreary time. My question is, when do I take off the flowers and the stem?
Wow, Donna, good for you. 15 amaryllis. I'm sure that was a beautiful sight. The flower, as soon as the flower has faded, the petals have faded, you can cut off the very top of that where the flower is. The actual green stalk, you can leave. That green stalk, it might not look so good, but that is still photosynthesizing and making sugar for the bulb. So you can leave that on. It will start to turn yellow and brown. And then when it's yellow and brown, you can cut the stalk off. But, wow, if you've got 15 blooming, I don't need to tell you how to keep these. You're doing a great job. Good for you.
All right, great call, Donna. Thanks. By the way, we have a number of texts this morning, Mary, that the ticks are out. People have seen ticks, so beware of that. Let's go to the phones again. Frank in Bloomington. Frank, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, good morning, Mary. I have a question. I like to garden, and in the spring of the year, I have my garden tilled. And then just before planting, when I go up there with all my equipment, et cetera, I throw some 10-10-10 fertilizer on top of the dirt, and then I mix it in good with the rake. Is that a good idea? I heard it's not good for the vegetables, aren't as healthy doing that.
Well, most vegetables do have a high fertility requirement. So that what you're doing is the standard recommendation we have had for vegetables and growing vegetables for many, many years. We do have high fertility soils in Minnesota, but vegetables, especially ones where you want a lot of fruit and so on, usually need that higher fertilizer. It's always a good idea to have a soil test done. If you hadn't done that for a while, that's a good idea. We have the information on how to take a soil test at the extension.umn.edu website. For years, people have done it. The other thing you might do is, rather than scatter it widely all over it, you might put it in the individual holes where you're planting tomato plants or pepper plants, or put it in the row and till it underneath the row before you put your seed down. So local application might be more beneficial than broadcasting it. But if you do a soil test, you'll really know what your nutrient level is.
Mary, is there any guidance on if you have raised garden beds? I have a couple of raised gardens where I grow vegetables just because in my neighborhood, the raised gardens tend to keep the critters out. It works pretty well. But I generally every year are putting some new soil in, trying to, I don't change out the soil completely, but every year I'm amending the soil, if you will, with new fresh soil and kind of changing it out every so often. But are there any specific recommendations on those raised beds?
What you're doing is great, Steve. The raised beds, reapplication of soil, that really is a good idea. Raised beds are much better drained. The drainage is superior, so the plant roots get a lot of oxygen as well as water. They usually require more water in a raised bed because of the drainage. But what you're doing, reapplying soil, adding soil, is a good idea.
All right, quick text line. We ask Larry, let's go to Larry in Janesville first. Let's get Larry in before the weather break. Larry, you're on the Smart Garden Show.
Yes, a very good morning to you. I have a question. I have a number of maple trees in the yard, and last fall they didn't shed their leaves until basically December. So I didn't get a chance to rake and clean up the yard. Having said that, I'm just curious. I plan right now, as soon as it dries out or warms up, you know, I plan on mulching these leaves, you know, a number of times to try to grind them up where they go into the soil. Curious, what is the nutritional value of these leaves? What is the pros and cons of mulching and incorporating them into the lawn versus raking them and taking them off?
So that's a great question, Larry. Yes, maple leaves, especially last year, were really late to fall. So chopping them up with your mower is a good idea. You will need to mulch them several times in order to be able to see the grass. So after you do the mowing and so on, if you can't still see the grass easily, then you need to rake those leaves and remove them because they will suffocate the grass. If you can't see the grass, it's not going to grow. So you got to move them off there. So your other question about the nutritional value of maple leaves, not much. There's a little bit of nutrition in there, but not much. There's more nutrition when they're totally decomposed and decayed as organic matter, adding that carbon back into the soil. So the nutritional value is pretty much when they're decayed. But interestingly enough, there are some kinds of maples that when chopped up on lawns have actually reduced the population of dandelions. So they act kind of as a weed control, and there is some research that has shown certain maples will do that with the mulching. So, rake off the excess and clean that up so your lawn can begin to grow.
Quick break. We have more with Mary Meyer. It is our Smart Garden Show. Each and every Saturday morning between 8 and 9 a.m. The phone number again, 651-989-9226, 651-989-9226. 9226. And you can call or text the program here on News Talk, E30WCCO. Our Smart Garden Show continues with Mary Meyer. A lot of calls and a lot of texts. We have Barb, Jack, and Gary waiting on the phone lines. We'll go to Barbara in a moment, but first from our text line, I have a bird feeder hanging over my hosta garden. Can I use preen so fallen seed doesn't sprout, or will preen hurt the hostas?
Great question. Preen is a free emergence herbicide, so it kills seeds as they're germinating. It kind of makes a film across the soil. In theory, no, that should not hurt your hosta, but preen has a long soil residual. It can have a residual for a year in the soil, and I'd be careful in using it around any plants that you want to grow. In theory, it should not hurt your hosta. Hostas are a big plant. They're not a seed germinating, but they will make a film across the soil. So you might see some tip burn or some browning on the hosta. Because I think what this listener is trying to do is to prevent all the bird seed from germinating. And hopefully the birds have eaten most of the seed and you just have the shells there.
All right. One other from the text line. Is there an advantage to using pelleted garden seed like carrots or beets versus regular seed?
So pelleted seed is great. It's usually much more expensive because there's been quite a bit of time taken to encapsulate that seed so that it's a bigger seed, and then it's easier to plant. So yes, you often can space it properly when you're planting it. You don't have to thin as much, and usually the seeds will grow individually stronger and quicker. So not all seeds available pelleted, but yes, if you find it, it's usually quite a good deal, especially for small seed.
And that's been a trend with grass seed. I've noticed that you can buy it in a pelleted form with some of the fertilizer and coating on it that'll help absorb and hold water around the seed.
Yes, that's right, Steve.
Yeah, and I've had pretty good luck with it. If you forget to water, for instance, one day, it'll typically survive, which is a good thing if you're forgetful. Out of the phone lines we go, Barbara in Minneapolis. Barbara, you're on the air with Mary Meyer.
Hi, thank you much. My neighbor has a yard that let whatever blows in there, they let it grow. They now have a pine tree that was about 6 feet tall for a while. It's now over their garage and the wires. And last year it started dropping lots of brown needles. It looks real healthy, though, and it's in my garden. And I have daylilies and hydrangeas. Is it going to hurt those? And one other thing about the preen, can I plant a tomato plant where that was last year?
Yes, you can plant a tomato plant where you had preen last year, but don't put in beet seeds or carrot seeds or anything like that because they won't come up. But the tomato plant, yes, the plant, a bigger plant will be fine. And the other thing, the needles. Actually, the pine needles should not be a problem at all. If I were you, I would rake up those needles and use them as mulch where you want to prevent weed growth or weeds growing. In the south where they have the long needle pines, they actually bale and sell that mulch. And we don't see that up here in the north, but pine needles are a great source of organic matter. That's another type of living mulch that you can use to prevent weed growth on the top of any of your beds. And although they are acidic in nature, they are like a drop in the ocean for changing the soil pH. So I would not worry about the soil pH at all.
One other follow-up on tomatoes. It's way too early to think about planting tomatoes. I always wait till Memorial Day weekend before putting tomatoes in the ground. But that is a crop that you want to rotate. You don't want to put tomatoes in the same spot year in and year out. True or false?
That is true, Steve. The rotation of plant families, the vegetables, especially the Solanaceae family, tomatoes, potatoes, peppers, eggplant, there are a lot of fungal diseases and blights that are perpetuated year after year. So ideally, you should move those far away from where you had them before. I know that's a challenge for those of us with community gardens and small garden plots, but still moving them to the other side of your garden, as far away as you can get in a rotation, that's a great idea. We do have, as far as timing, we do have a lot of information on our Yard and Garden blog, videos on starting seed and timetables on when to start seed. So we're getting close to the time for starting tomatoes, peppers, and so on, those seeds, because hopefully in another 6 weeks or so, we'll be able to think about planting those outdoors.
Very good. Mary Meyer joining us here on our Smart Garden Show, and it's on the air each and every Saturday. Let's go to the phones again. We go to Andover, and Jack, you're on the air. Hello.
Good morning, guys. Just a question about moving forward at nurseries. Do you see any issues with not having availability of tomato plants? And I like putting cucumber plants in, that type of thing. Have you heard anything about that?
Well, you can find this information on the website. So growers, greenhouse growers, plant growers are essential industries in Minnesota. Believe me, these growers have their plants already in the ground and growing, and they will have plenty of plants for you. We're hopeful in the industry that the garden centers will be able to be open as essential industries also. But our industry is very creative and will figure out ways to get the plants to you, whether it's curbside pickups or other online orders. But the plants will be there.
And okay, thank you.
Yeah, very, very good, Jack. That's a great call because so many people enjoy spending time in their yards and gardens. And I know once upon a time when my daughter played hockey, they had a fundraiser, and the kids you'd order the plants, and then they would drop those off. So maybe we'll have some sort of delivery option, if you will, or you can pull up to the garden center, and they'll put the plants in your car, just kind of like you do at the grocery store right now. I'm sure, like you said, we'll get very creative when that time comes.
That's right, Steve. So there are plenty of plants, and as you say, there is a great restoration with healing. So our gardens are a great thing to be thinking about now, looking around your landscape and thinking about what trees you could plant, as well as thinking about growing some vegetables, even if it's just a couple of tomatoes in a container or some herbs that your family likes. We have lots of information about that, small space gardening. That's another new article that came up on the Yard and Garden blog that people can find at extension.umn.edu, and then click on Yard and Garden.
Mary Meyer joining us here on our Smart Garden Show. Always a pleasure to visit with Mary. And by the way, we want to go to the phone lines again. Gary in St. Louis Park. Gary, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, good morning, Mary and Steve. You guys have already answered my question about when to plant tomatoes, but my question is, I've got a couple of pots. They're about 2 feet in diameter, and I want to know what the best soil is. Should I use topsoil with peat, or potting soil for that?
Well, it's your choice. Most people will use potting soil. So commercial potting soil in the lightweight bags, these bags that are easy to pick up and lift, those lightweight bags do have quite a bit of peat in them. They have a lot of air space, and they have great water holding capacity. So the commercial growers, that is what they use. They do not use our native soil from the ground. Now, you can make your own soil mix from the ground. You can take our wonderful Minnesota topsoil that's dark in color, even if it's heavy clay soil. You take the regular topsoil, one part peat, and one part sand, perlite, or vermiculite. And those three components can make a nice soil mix. That's quite laborious. You need a big wheelbarrow or something to mix that up in. But that's the old standard of making your own soil mix. So either of those will work. It's less expensive if you make your own. But the commercial mixes, lightweight bags, are really great.
And one of the things you brought up, gardening in small spaces, also a container gardening, if people live in an apartment and have a balcony in other areas, it's still possible to get those garden fresh tomatoes from a pot on a deck or a porch.
Yes, that's exactly right, Stephen. The kinds that I grow, the tomatoes I grow in containers, are the small cherry tomatoes or the pear ones, because those are really productive. You know, you can't make your own sauce from those. I guess you could if you got enough of them, but they are so productive. The Sweet 100 or Sweet 1000, there's Sun Gold, there's Sun Sugar. Those are some of the yellow ones. We have those recommendations when master gardeners throughout the state have grown tomatoes. Those recommendations are, again, at our Extension website. Cornell University has a wonderful, the most expansive variety trials I've ever seen are up at Cornell's website, and they have every tomato known to man, and the ratings on that and recommendations, just a huge wealth of information at Cornell. But for Minnesota, if you want to see what master gardeners have liked, you can see that at extension.umn.edu. Click on Yard and Garden.
One of my favorite treats in the summer are those fresh cherry tomatoes that I pick out of my own garden. I don't think there's anything better. Quick break with Mary Meyer. It is our Smart Garden Show. We have much more coming up. By the way, our phone number is 651-989-9226. You can use that to call or text the program. And if you want to visit with Mary Meyer, by all means, get in those phone lines right now. Here on News Talk, 830-WCCO. It is our Smart Garden Show, Saturday mornings between 8 and 9 a.m. Mary Meyer joins us today. The phone number is 651-989-9226, 651-989-9226. Feel free to call or text. We'll be going to the text line in a moment. But first, Leroy and Eden Prairie are on the air with Mary.
Yes, my yard has been taken over by a green fungus. There's no roots. I can pick it off, and it's really bad.
Okay, Leroy, I think what you're seeing are the remains of a fungal disease such as snow mold that might be on, when you say your yard, I assume it's on your lawn.
Yeah.
We often see this after the snow leaves. Many of these snow mold or snow blights are actually fungal diseases that like cold temperatures and the moisture that's there. So most times for a homeowner, these are not fatal. As they dry out and as your lawn dries out, if you can rake that area, that will help to aerate it and disperse that fungal disease. And I think that that will take care of it. So just with time and the warming up, it should be fine. Raking will help as long as things have dried out enough so you don't see your footprints walking along there. So wait till it's dry and then do some raking.
All right, so it is okay generally to be out on your turf grass now if it is dry. You don't want to be in any of those low areas, et cetera, where it is still wet.
Right. It's really hard to make a generalization because in my...
Sure.
Lawn, my backyard is a slope and the south, and it dries out quickly. It's been dry for quite a while. the front where the north, where the snow has just now finally left in the shadier areas, that's much wetter. And if I remove or move the leaves and so on, there's a lot of ice that's still in that area. So if you still see ice and can see the moisture, then just wait a little while. So work on the south side first.
From our text line, here's a quick one. When is the best time to plant arborvitae? Can I do it now? And once again, can you recommend a fast-growing variety? I want to create a bit of a screen or a privacy barrier, if you will.
Yeah, so the arborvitae, there are several kinds that are available. You can plant that now as soon as you can, as soon as the soil has warmed up enough and the frost is out of that. So I would look online at your garden centers, and the techie variety is often recommended, but there are several different kinds depending on what the ultimate height is that you want. You can check that out at extension.umn.edu, Yard and Garden. We have a wonderful plant selection tool, the Plant Elements of Design. We'll show you the pictures there and the different heights of arborvitae, but great time to be doing it now in the next couple of months.
Vern in Ridgefield, you're on the air with Mary Meyer. Good morning.
Hi, Mary. Vern here, Ridgefield. I had a yellow crocus last Saturday. I had one bloom, and on Wednesday it was full bloom, beautiful. It had nine blooms. It was at least 5 by 6.
Good for you. That's great, Vern. Wonderful to see those spring crocus coming. They are one of the first things to come out in the spring, and they're great for pollinators. Amazing how the first year we often see the biggest blooms on these spring bulbs, but crocus are something that actually can multiply as long as you leave that green foliage up and let the green foliage mature for several weeks.
All right. Very good. Thanks, Vern. Let's go to Jean in Mendota Heights. Jean, you're on the air.
Hi there. Can you suggest a tree? We lost one right in front of the house. I'd say it's about 25 feet out, and it got girdling. It was a really pretty maple that would just turn gorgeous colors in the fall. Prior to that, there was a mountain ash in there for many years. That was kind of messy when it would drop little orange, you know, seeds or berries. But, you know, it can't be something that's huge and covers up the house, but it's leaving quite a blank space there when we take that maple down. We haven't taken it down yet, but it's dead.
So there are lots of great trees, Steve, that you could replace that with. If you want a smaller one, of course, you could go with a crabapple or the tree lilac. Both of those are small but have nice flowers on them. There are many new maples. There are several maples that are cultivars recommended and introduced from the University of Minnesota. The honey locust is a larger tree but has a fine foliage, not as much of an issue with raking. Oaks are a tremendous tree. They're one of our great trees that are native as well as support so many other forms of wildlife. So oaks really are one of my favorites. They're also disease-resistant elms. The St. Croix American elm, wonderful tree. I planted that in my backyard. So if those aren't enough ideas, again, go to the Plant Elements of Design on the Extension website.
Yeah, and the elm is a great tree, the disease-resistant. They're extraordinary, and they really grow fast, Mary.
They do. Yeah, they're very, very fast growers.
Back to our text line here on our Smart Garden program. When should the springtime application of milky spore be put down? The Japanese beetles have been really bad in my yard. Can the milky spore be broadcast? How do you apply? I would assume that's some sort of treatment for the beetles.
Yeah, the milky spore is a bacterial disease, bacteria. It's a bacteria that actually feeds on the grubs. So that is a biological control for Japanese beetles. So that is something you have to make sure, number one, that the milky spore, that the bacteria is actually alive, that what you're putting down is a live product. And most bacteria need warmer temperatures to survive and to grow well and to populate. So it's really a summer application. I would think maybe May, but probably better off in June. And having said all that, there's quite a bit of controversy about whether or not milky spore can actually control Japanese beetle grubs. You've got to have a lot of grubs and for that to actually work. So I would consider getting that from a garden center that's keeping it maybe in a refrigerator where it's still alive, or getting it mail order so that you make sure that the product that you have is truly alive and can work.
From our text line, I have a yellow smoke bush, full grown, nice shape. Do I need to prune it? Also, I have a younger a red smoke bush with very few tall stems. How do I prune that to make it thicker?
Yeah, so here's our first question on pruning, and the show is almost over because I was going to talk a lot today about pruning, Steve. So the smoke bush is marginally hardy in our climate, although we do have some big plants out at the Arboretum. You can cut off one-third of the top of those tall stems, and that will help your the side buds to break and to make that bushier. Otherwise, I would not worry too much about pruning your smoke bush. A lot of it is keeping alive what you've actually got there in our climate. So you don't have to worry about pruning it, other than taking off some of that tip growth to make it the side branches come out. This time of year, we have reached April. Yay, we have reached April. So April is our month to do not prune oaks. So April, May, June, a big hazard for pruning oak trees because of oak wilt. No pruning now on the oak trees. Our spring flowering shrubs like lilacs, spirea, and so on, do not prune these shrubs if you want to see the flowers.
Okay.
The pruning on the spring plants is just after they flower. So the smoke bush is more really a midsummer blooming plant, a late spring, midsummer. So you can prune that, but just the tips I would take off on that.
All right, Mary, we've got to run. Time is tight. Once again, the website.
extension.umn.edu, then click on Yard and Garden. You can search that or go to the blog where we have lots of new articles about spring, making plants for your garden, small space gardening, starting seed, how to start a raspberry patch, lots of great reading and lots of videos also up there.
All right, Mary, have a great day and thanks.
What's up, little psychos? I'm Investigator Slater, host of the Psychopedia podcast. Psychopedia is a true crime podcast delivering raw, real, and absolutely gripping episodes every single week. I dig deep to uncover fascinating details of heinous true crime cases while exploring criminology and psychology theories. I take you into the absolute darkest corners of the human psyche, my favorite territory, and present cases like you've never heard them before. Follow and listen to Psychopedia everywhere you get your podcasts.